A huge Monday Night Raw to review for you guys here tonight, with Bobby Lashley being revealed as Drew McIntyre's next opponent. Zelina Vega kicks out Austin Theory, who then finds a new leader to follow. Kevin Owens returns, and so much more. We're going to get everything started right after this. Hey, everybody. So it's not often that we talk about music here on this show or bands, but when we do, I think it's when it's worth listening to and when I run across a song or a band that I think it's worth sharing on this show. And that's one of these moments, and that's one of those bands that I think you guys should listen to. And it's just a particular song right now. And the song is called To the Fallen Sons. It's by a band called Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S. And they're a newly formed band from Sweden. And they love making music about history, which is really, really cool. So this song in particular is about Carolians and the soldiers of the Swedish kings, King Charles VI and King Charles VII in the late 17th and 18th centuries. So let me give you a quick sample. And again, you can find them on Spotify under the song To the Fallen Sons. It's by Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S.
WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Cause Stone Cold said so.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Thank you so much again for taking the time out of your day, your night, your morning. Hell, whenever you're listening to me, that's your time. So thank you for making this show a small part of that. And this is the WWE Podcast, the Raw Review version of the show. And boy, do I have so much to get to today. And yes, it's just Monday Night Raw, but a very eventful Monday Night Raw, maybe, arguably, the most eventful Monday Night Raw since the coronavirus era and the empty arena era that we're in, although signs are pointing to possible sports returning, even in a limited capacity with fans in attendance, but at a very, again, a limited capacity in buildings. I don't know what that means for WWE. I haven't heard that, anything specific with wrestling, but we're headed in the right direction at least, right? And here in New York, most of us are in phase one of reopening. So hopefully where you are, things are relaxing, people getting their heads on straight, but you're being safe. And we start to get back to normal. And I know that people are saying, oh, there's not going to be your normal again. It's a new normal. But here's the thing. We want our old normal back. And eventually I think we'll get there. Alrighty. So let's, before we get going, just a quick thing on my Twitter. I have no idea what the heck happened to my Twitter. The show's Twitter at the WWE Podcast. I think, well, I know I got suspended. The account got suspended. I don't know why. It has nothing to do with copyright. I'm not using the WWE logo. I'm not spamming. I'm not mass following or unfollowing. I have no idea what triggered the suspension, but hopefully we'll be back up and running in the next day or two. I hope so, because I use that feed for a lot of different things to promote and to interact with you guys. So just an FYI, if you're like, where the hell does Twitter feed go? I am with you. I'm sitting there going, what the F happened? So hopefully we get that back up and running, but that's my problem, not yours. So other than that, my website still works. my Instagram. I actually have an Instagram, although I don't really update it as much as I should. There's also a Facebook page at all. You guessed it. Just search for it. The WWE podcast. And maybe Twitter or WWE told Twitter to go after me. I don't know. I doubt it, of course. But something triggered them. Something triggered Twitter to go, hey, turn this mother effer off, right? I don't know. But some of you are probably cheering for joy, going, ah, good, that SOB is silenced. The heel anti-hero of podcasting has been silenced on social media. But don't worry. I'm going to kick out, okay? I'm going to kick out of the finish, and I'll be back. So don't you worry. Don't worry about that. So for those of you that love the show, I'll be back online Zoom. All right. Again, a very eventful Monday Night Raw. Very eventful because we had returns. We had leadership changes. We had character development. We had have new rivalries. This was a real turning point for WWE on a lot of different levels. And that's a good thing. I honestly don't have much to really complain and moan about, right? There's really not a whole lot I can sit here tonight and say to you, oh, that was such a dumb decision last night, or this was eye-rolling, that was eye-rolling. No. I really, from top to bottom, enjoyed the show much, much more, probably the most in weeks, if not months, than I've enjoyed Raw, at least we're talking again, in this empty arena era. So I hope it continues. Whatever they did last night was good. Obviously, you can't have returns every week. You can't have new rivalries every week. And maybe that's due in part to that fresh feel. But again, which you can't do every week. But it was certainly a nice change of pace. And it seems like we're back on track for some good wrestling programming. So what I'm going to do is go through Raw here at a non-linear path. I'm not doing it from start to finish because y'all know that's not how my brain works. So I'm going to go with the last thing my mind and my eyes saw, and that was Drew McIntyre standing in the ring after extremely predictably beating Baron Corbin to Bobby Lashley at the top of the ramp, who was there the entirety of the match with his manager of MVP. And I'm loving this pairing. You know, Bobby Lashley is not exactly known for his blow-you-away promos. He'll blow you away with his body and how, you know, athletic he looks and the moves he can do. And it's maybe his presence. But he'll never blow you away with his promos. Ever. At least from the body of work I've seen, it's pretty safe to say that the volume of the sample size that we've been given from Bobby Lashley, that he will never blow you away with a promo. And that's okay, because that's what MVP is there for. I think this is a very good match. It's only been a week, but they seem comfortable with one another. MVP seems like a nice fit with Bobby Lashley, who is distancing himself pretty quickly from Lana, and that's a good thing. I like how WWE didn't just pretend that that didn't happen. And they show Lana backstage just throwing silverware and whatever was in that cart that was next to her backstage. And by the way, what are forks and spoons doing next to, like, you know, like video equipment and stuff? I don't know. Just something for her to throw. But it was fine. It's just a signal in the right direction. And that's what you need if you're going to make Bobby Lashley a feel like a true contender and a threat to Drew McIntyre. More of a threat, you could argue, than Seth Rollins, at least on a physical level. He's certainly much larger and more muscular and physically imposing than Seth Rollins. So you got the visual going for you. Now, when it comes to personality and when it comes to a believability based on how they've booked this person in the past of could they beat Drew McIntyre, you would say no, because of how they booked Lashley over the last 3 years since he's been back with WWE. And even prior to that, I mean, the biggest moment Bobby Lashley's ever had in WWE was probably him versus Umaga at WrestleMania for the hair versus hair match with Donald Trump. And really, since that time, Bobby Lashley hasn't done a whole lot. I mean, really, think about what he's done. Most notably, most recently, been hooked up with Lana, and that, to me, which was a disaster and an embarrassment of a storyline, although I know most people seem to enjoy it for whatever silly reason. He hasn't really done anything that you'd go, oh, man, that is great. He doesn't have a whole lot of those moments, and perhaps WWE is seeing a lot more value and potential, and they're taking this time while there's no audience to do what they want to do with Lashley so that maybe when there is an audience, it may garner more of a reaction rather than just being in front of an audience in which people would probably groan at Lashley because he's just kind of, he's got an imposing figure. He's got a body of a god, but the personality is, you know, at level 2 out of 10. I mean, this guy just, if he has a personality, certainly doesn't know how to turn it up. And look, promos aren't easy. I'm not sitting here as a fan thinking that promos are easy. It may be harder to learn how to cut a great promo than it is to learn how to do the physical moves in the ring. So, you know, there's that. But I applaud WWE for being able to think outside the box here and bring in Lashley. And they're doing the same thing with Apollo Crews. I don't know if it's African-American month secretly in WWE. I mean, then they brought out R-Truth. I mean, they are just really bringing out the ethnicity to the forefront with WWE, and I'm cool with it, but seriously, maybe it is secretly the Black American History Month in WWE, and they just didn't tell anybody, or they think it's February. I mean, maybe they don't even know what month it is. That's great, though. I think that Bobby Lashley is extremely underutilized in WWE, and I hope that we eventually get to a Lesnar versus Lashley match. I said that a couple of weeks ago. I think Lesnar versus Lashley has a lot of money in it. And yes, WWE didn't have a whole lot of time to get Bobby Lashley ready for Drew McIntyre. Beating up R-Truth, you know, every couple weeks isn't exactly a way to skyrocket somebody to the top. I mean, beating R-Truth doesn't carry a whole lot of water at this point. But they positioned him as a legitimate threat. He was all business. He distanced himself from Lana. And those are all positives. Those are all the things you want to do as preliminary things to then move that person on to bigger and better things, which apparently you go from Lana to the WWE Championship, which that's a bit of a leap. I mean, if it wasn't Bobby Lashley, who has been in the WWE for, my gosh, you count his 10-year away. I mean, we know he went to TNA. He's been there for quite some time. And if you followed his career, he's had some good moments. He has, I mean, yeah, we all know he also went into MMA. He tried that for a little while. And so this guy's got the credentials. But to take it from R-Truth to the WWE Championship is a bit of a stretch. And so there's that. And you have not a lot of time to get him ready. That shows you also the lack of depth of main event guys on Raw and on SmackDown for that matter. Star power is a big problem right now in WWE and continues to be. And they're doing their best to give guys that they normally wouldn't give an opportunity. That's cool. I'm on board for it. And we're seeing that on Raw too with Austin Theory. We'll get to that in just a minute. That's my next topic here. And so, again, I like Bobby Lashley versus Drew McIntyre. I hope what happens is, if I'm booking myself ahead and this Lashley versus Lashley versus Brock Lesnar is ever going to be a thing, then you need to have Lashley come out of this looking extremely strong and maybe not losing clean to Drew, maybe in a screwy finish where he accidentally gets himself disqualified and the match can, you know, this program continues. And I just hope that this is not all to just build Drew as unbeatable. Drew beat Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania and has since Claymore kicked everyone on Raw for what, 7 weeks now since he's been back. And they took that, after WrestleMania, and he took the WWE Championship onto Raw. He's been basically Claymore kicking the roster into oblivion. And yes, we know Drew's the man. We know he's the chosen one that we chose as fans. And absolutely, I will, you know, I and many fans would agree with WWE's choice to do this because we're the ones that guided WWE to do this. That's fine. But the thing is, you need to have credible opponents that can't all just get buried by Drew beating them clean. And Bobby Lashley, if you're going to bring him on to Brock Lesnar, if that's eventually where they want to go, because I don't think Bobby Lashley is going to win the championship. I mean, let's be serious. Or as Lance Storm would say, if I could be serious for a minute, right? Because there is little to no chance of that happening. Almost none. Really. I mean, probably zero. Really. Statistically, if you're going to do a mathematical equation on this, this is as close to zero as you could get that Bobby Lashley wins. And that's okay, because I think the goal here is to really elevate Lashley. It's not to elevate Drew, because Drew's already at the top. Drew beat the top guy in the entire industry. I don't care what promotion you're talking about. He's the top guy. Brock Lesnar is the guy across any promotion, not just WWE. So you can't build him any further. You can't cement Drew any further. And right now, it should be about building the undercard, building opponents. It's not about Drew squashing opponents or just always beating them clean. I'm not saying he has to cheat to win because he's a babyface. He's not going to do that. But the point is, I don't need a clean victory every time from Drew. Once in a while, he needs to run into Mother Luck, right? And he needs to, or WWE needs to focus their efforts on not just Drew here, because Drew has been made. He's a made man. He did what all the fans wanted to have him do at Mania. Conquer Brock Lesnar. Do it in a believable way. And in a way that Seth never felt like. And that's what happened. So check, check, check. Now it's about building the guys under you. You can't wrestle yourself. You got to build the undercard. You got to build guys that make it look like you could lose your belt and have them move on to other opponents. It's not always just about Drew here. As much as I love Drew as champion, we have to look outside of Drew because he is just one man on the show and a big piece of the show, no doubt. He is the guy right now, and that's great, and I think he should be. But it should also be secondarily about building the stars underneath him so that they can go on to other opponents and be able to work with them in a credible way that makes you remember, oh yeah, he had that badass match with Drew and he never really lost or this or that happened. You know, there are things that WWE should really be looking at here, and that is one of them. And that to me would, it may take priority if I were booking this thing. Yes, Drew is made, but to me, it's about building the undercard, and Seth, after two straight, just clean losses, has really lost all his momentum up until last night. I mean, it's going to take time to get back, and he is working on that in a very diligent and smart way. Creative has done a really good job so far with Seth building him back, and I hope that as I transition seamlessly into my next topic, with Seth now seemingly gathering another follower, I think that that is a smart move by WWE, because not only does it help cement Seth as this villainous character that is brainwashing young minds and also coming at them at their most vulnerable state after their loss, right? He did the same thing with Murphy. He did the same thing. That's how he recruited Murphy. If you remember, it was Buddy. I'll just say Buddy Murphy because it just sounds so much better. When Buddy Murphy lost to Aleister Black for the third time and was sitting at ringside and just not going to the back and just sitting and sulking, Seth Rollins came up to him and extended an olive branch, and he accepted. Same thing happened here, although it was because the group turned on him. Angel Garza and Andrade and Zelina, which I'll get to the turn in a minute because there's also that part of it that seems to be forgotten. But it was in the same type of scenario, the same type of environment where Seth picked them up at their most vulnerable moment. And that is such a heel thing to do. And I love how also Murphy, when Seth talks, is almost in like a prayer stance. He has his hands folded. Seth's cadence when he speaks now is much different. The music has changed. That's great. The glove he wears, the suit now, just everything about Seth has slowly morphed into an ultra-psychotic, delusional cult leader. And I'm loving this Seth version of Seth Rollins. I mean, he is a staple of Monday Night. I enjoy and look forward to seeing Seth every Monday. And I don't know, still know where AOP are. I mean, I would love to see them back in the mix sooner than later. And hopefully they rejoin Seth and maybe gain those Raw Tag Team titles. I think that would be a smart thing. Take them off of the Street Profits, who are more concerned about playing basketball than defending the Raw Tag Team titles. But to me, this whole Seth character it's got a lot of legs. It's got length. It's got Seth, who's ultra talented on the mic. Of course, in the ring, we all know his ability. And now he's also, as I just talked about with Drew and with Bobby, the goal here, yes, is to focus around Seth. And Seth is the head of the snake of this group. And he's the kingpin. He's the one that calls the shots. Yes, it should be focused on him. But what you have to remember is this: when groups are formed, it's to build new stars. Look at any group that's ever been formed. Stars should come out of those groups. Groups are built to disintegrate. Groups are built to fall apart and self-disintegrate and self-destruct, I should say. That is what groups are for. That's what tag teams generally are for as well. And because the real money is in the singles. I mean, that's where the real star power is, are singles performers, singles wrestlers. And when you have a group, Seth came from a group that was, we all know, The Shield, and was made from The Shield and went on to do what he did with The Authority and then try to be the babyface but went back heel. And Seth's been on a very interesting journey. But the key is here that he is taking young guys and trying to build them. You have Austin Theory, a guy that's 22 years old. This guy's a prodigy, as Zelina said before Angel Garza and Andrade kicked his face in. And it's true. Austin Theory is a absolute prodigy and has, I think, a very bright future. I mean, I don't know much about the guy. I'd love to hear something on the mic from both Austin Theory and from Buddy Murphy. I know I'm calling him Buddy because that's what I said. Look, he is Buddy Murphy to me. Okay. So to me, I would love to hear from them because we haven't heard anything from them. Nothing. So I hope next week that we get some kind of explanation or some kind of mission statement or some kind of just backstory as to what they are, why they're here, why did they join Seth, what they believe in Seth, you know, what they see in Seth, all of that. I want something from them, and I hope that they give this to us because I think it's necessary. They can't go not speaking forever. And so anyway, Seth's got now a second disciple as he continues to recruit. I'm liking that. And you know what? The breakup, as I said, the other part of this is this split with Angel Garza and Zelina Vega and Andrade. You know, I think it was the right move because you have Zelina Vega and Andrade and Angel Garza. They all they're all the same ethnicity. And you have the kind of the outlier of Austin Theory, who never felt like he belonged anyway. And you don't have to be the same race to fit in. But look, when you're in pro wrestling, it doesn't hurt to look the same to feel like a team. Okay? So, that's my point. And Austin Theory felt, not just from a visual perspective with color, but also, and really ethnicity, but just from a in-ring competitiveness and a personality. He never really seemed to gel with the group. So he was the ugly duckling, so to speak, of the group. And it made sense for him to leave because he just never seemed to fit. And now I think he'll find a nice home with Seth. Obviously, elevated being with Seth shows you that WWE sees potential in Austin Theory. A guy that a month ago, many of us were like, who? It's amazing, right? How quickly things go from who to, I think that's a good idea. And I really do. I think Austin Theory has a very bright future as long as we hear more from him. Same with Buddy Murphy. So Seth, I also love the chicken, you know what, version of Seth when he's a heel. when he doesn't back up his own disciples and will just back out of a fight. And that's exactly what happened on Raw when he walked back up the ramp and didn't help his disciples when they were in the middle of a fight. And that is just, but yet the followers keep blindly following him. And that's what makes this great, is Seth Rollins won't fight for them, but they'll fight for him. I mean, does it get any more yellow stripe up your back cowardice? I mean, it's just great stuff. Great stuff. Subtle stuff, but great. Great. Loving it. And so, I mean, really, I can't say anything bad about that segment. And Zelina Vega getting a slap in on Austin Theory was pretty good. She was back in a more prominent position on Raw. You guys know I've been singing her praises for as long as I can remember. And she showed it again Monday night. She just never seems to lose it. Never seems to lose it. And next week on Raw, we get a championship, United States Championship match between Apollo Crews and Andrade for the United States Championship. And I'm a little fearful that Apollo Crews could win. I don't think it's time for Andrade to lose it. So we'll see. I'm a little bit concerned. I hope Angel Garza is there to make sure that doesn't happen, and or Zelina Vega. But Zelina is, as always, just absolutely on point. So I've said it again, but she just is so magnetic and believable. She doesn't feel like she's acting. She just feels like she's being herself, and that's true acting when you don't look like you're acting. So hats off to her, as I do every single week. And Angel Garza and her and Andrade, I think, are a much more cohesive unit. It's like they've trimmed the excess fat, so to speak, and they just look like more of a team. And I think you'll get that more moving forward, as maybe Angel Garza eventually breaks off at some point. I don't want this group to completely dissolve. But all right, we're going to take a quick break. And then on the other side is going to be my thoughts on Edge and Orton that occurred on Monday night, the promo between the two, and the use of the word wrestling. Very prominent in that promo. So some thoughts on that. And a lot more coming up right after this.
You're listening to the WWE Podcast. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hey, everybody. So it's not often that we talk about music here on this show or bands, but when we do, I think it's when it's worth listening to and when I run across a song or a band that I think it's worth sharing on this show. And that's one of these moments. And that's one of those bands that I think you guys should listen to. And it's just a particular song right now. And the song is called To the Fallen Sons. It's by a band called Carolus, Carolus. And they're a newly formed band from Sweden. And they love making music about history, which is really, really cool. So this song in particular is about Carolians and the soldiers of the Swedish kings, King Charles the VI and King Charles the VII in the late 17th and 18th centuries. So let me give you a quick sample. And again, you can find them on Spotify under the song To the Fallen Sons. It's by Carolus, Carolus.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
All right, so let's get into the Edge and Orton segment that opened Monday night. And You know, when I heard that line last week from Charlie Caruso about when Randy asked Edge if he would accept his challenge for Backlash for a straight-up wrestling match, and Charlie Caruso said, well, if Edge accepts, this could be the greatest WWE match ever, the greatest match ever. I mean, you guys heard my rant on that. I mean, what a silly marketing try to tagline this match with something cute type of phrase. I mean, I killed it. And this week they somewhat amended their statement. Again, I'm not putting this in Charlie Caruso. Clearly, she was told to say this. They always have to have some kind of cute tagline for the match. It's the most unique, right? It's the first time ever. I mean, it's too big for one night. I mean, they just can't have a match without trying to tag it with some kind of marketing that somebody came up with in a boardroom. And Vince goes, I like it. I don't know why they need to do this. And out of all things, they need to tag this as potentially the best match ever? What? I am befuddled and insulted by this as a fan. I mean, unless you've watched wrestling for maybe a few months, or you're new and you have nothing to base it on, and maybe they're just, you know, basically placating to and kowtowing to new fans and hoping that the people that are only listening to this are people that have had a sample size of wrestling, you know, of weeks and maybe months, and they have nothing else to go on, and they're like, yeah, that is the greatest match I've ever seen. Oh my God, they were right. But to anybody that's watched wrestling for like a year or more, this is not the greatest match. I don't know why they're even going there. I mean, it's a very amateur marketing phrase to use. It's almost like a 5-year-old came up with this. You know, you could see somebody asking a 5-year-old, hey, if you were to put a tagline, put a sentence under the marquee of this match, and you wanted to build it as big as possible, what would you say? That'd be the greatest match ever. Great, we're going to go with that. I mean, it really feels like that. It's amateur hour with this. And I don't understand, are they really trying to pull the rug from under us? And I don't know. I don't know. It bothers me because it's such a dumb phrase to say. Because the greatest wrestling match ever, even if it were true, it's very subjective. The greatest match, even I don't know what the greatest match ever is. I could have a list of matches I really love, but I can't pin, you know, greatest match ever. Like, somebody can't oftentimes pin their great favorite movie because it changes. Oh, God. But again, they amended this statement a little bit by having Charlie Caruso say that this could be viewed by some. There's the key phrase. This is the only thing they added. She said that this could be viewed by some as the greatest wrestling match ever. What? Okay, so nothing Kurt Angle did with Shawn Michaels counts. The WrestleMania main event at WrestleMania 20, nah, didn't count. I mean, Eddie Guerrero, Brock Lesnar. You go down the list here. I mean, yeah, Chris Benoit's blackballed, I get it. But he had some of the greatest matches you'll ever see. Ever. And you're going to tell me this is the greatest wrestling match ever with Orton and Edge? As great as these two guys are? Don't make me feel like an idiot. Don't try to make me feel like an idiot. It's so crazy. That was the only thing I had to complain about last night was just something Charlie Caruso said, who has been told to say, and the announcers who just doubled down on it. Doubled down on the stupidity of that line. I mean, it's utter lunacy that you would ever use that. Okay, I'm moving on. I know I'm ranting, and y'all are probably turned off by now, but it really bothers me. Okay? I don't know if it bothers you guys. It's really amateur hour with that line. Okay, but then we get Edge coming down, and, well, Orton came out first explaining that is a straight-up wrestling match that hard to comprehend? And he said that this is WWE. WWE stands for World Wrestling Entertainment. Wow. Who did he have to pay off to say that? Was Vince drunk when he signed off on that? I mean, I've been saying that for, hell, years, that they forgot about the second W in their name. And they've all been all about the E, but no W. And it was great to hear WWE allow the word wrestling on their show, because that's what they are. But I'm not going to go down that road. So Orton goes on to say again that, you know, Edge was the better man, but the better wrestler did not win. So Edge comes out and obviously accepts Orton's challenge. I mean, did anyone really believe that Edge was going to say, yeah, you're probably right. So, you know, have a good night. I'll see you later. Maybe we'll tweet sometime. No. I mean, that'd be silly. So Edge came out, and as Edge has been since he's returned, has been brilliant. I mean, everything about Edge's return has been awesome, other than the lack of an audience, which would have negated the need for a backstage marathon of blunt objects being used to hit one another at the Last Man Standing match at WrestleMania. So I can't really put that on Edge or Orton. So, but again, this promo here from Edge, he said that, I've said it before, I'll say it again, you're quite possibly the most talented person I've ever seen in a wrestling ring, but this isn't the life you wanted. This is the life you were handed. This is your backup plan. And he talks about how Orton was basically gifted this life and that he never really wanted this. He talked about how you didn't go to bed every night dreaming of becoming WWE champion like I did. You didn't cry the night you won the Intercontinental Championship like I did. In fact, I beat you for that title. I think it was back in 2004, he said. And it was just very heartfelt. Everything Edge says, I just believe. I mean, everything he says, I just feel is like scripture. He just has the ability to make me go, yeah, I think the earth is flat. Yeah, I think it is. Right? I mean, it just feels like Edge could convince me of anything if he just looks at me with those crazy eyes he's got. And so it was good. He accepted the challenge. There was no physicality, a straight up wrestling match. So it's official. I don't expect to see Edge probably for a couple of weeks, maybe until the face to face that they have at, the go home show, but I'm still looking forward to the match because I feel like this is where they should have started. I mentioned before, this feels backwards, but I'm on board for it because these two work so well off each other. And what's going to make it interesting is not just how this match ends, because it could end with Orton winning, and then Edge wants retribution, and you get your rubber match. That's fine, and you could go to SummerSlam. I think that would honestly be the best thing to do, because you could have this end at Backlash, and then Seth and Edge move on to one another. I've been advocating for an Edge versus Seth Rollins match, and I believe that'll happen during Edge's, you know, second coming here, no pun intended. I think that'll happen. Edge and Seth Rollins is pretty close to a dream match. I mean, when you look back at these two performers and the program they could have, I think it could be awesome. Really, I do. And so do they clean cut this program and it ends at Backlash between Orton and Edge? Or does it end in a screwy finisher having Edge win, and then it's a massive Hell in a Cell blow-off or some kind of, like, I don't know, insane finish in like a three stages of hell match at SummerSlam or something like that? Could it? I mean, I'd give it a 50-50 shot that this is the final match between these two. So we'll see. But I'm looking forward to whatever Edge is doing. And Orton, to be honest. It's just going to be like, hey, what is Orton going to do after this? Because Orton works so well. He's at such another level when Edge is around, that it makes you wonder, what is Orton going to look like after he's demotivated again to work with, like, I don't know, whoever he's working with. I mean, anybody beyond Edge, Orton has not seemed this inspired in many, many years. So we'll have to see the evolution of Randy Orton back to Mr. Play it safe, take minimal bumps, do the bare minimum, hit an RKO, and go home. I mean, that's been what Orton has been living off of for many, many years. So, all right. Moving on. Kevin Owens returned last night, and I was good with it. I thought it was a little underwhelming. The Kevin Owens show being destroyed. Well, the set of it being destroyed by Natalya, who lost to Shayna Baszler earlier. And I'll get to that after this review of Kevin Owens. But Kevin Owens really comes out to nothing. And this is, again, this ties into the whole Angel Garza and Zelina Vega and Austin Theory program that happened. But Kevin Owens was on the ropes and just kind of like nonchalantly looking at the three individuals in the ring. And four individuals, including Zelina. And says that he's standing there because he's not stupid and has learned that when he's in the ring with, or when he's outnumbered in the ring, it never ends well for him. So smart. I mean, Kevin Owens has proved to be a fairly smart babyface in the long stream of idiotic babyfaces that, you know, just lack logic. And he also, at the very beginning of his promo, mentioned that he was out for, what, 7 weeks because of the WrestleMania moment he had with Seth. And there was the moment, the bump that he took hitting Seth from the WrestleMania sign. I mean, it was a great bump. They had the match of the night. I would love to see those two work together again at some point in the future because they work very well together. Probably not in the foreseeable future, maybe towards the end of the year or next year. But they worked well together, and I was happy for those two guys. And you know, Kevin Owens is back, and it's good to see him back. Raw certainly needs the star power, even though Raw viewership was down 8% this week, so that's not good. But we did get a returning Kevin Owens, and maybe that'll bump ratings for next week based on the fact that, you know, you had a returning Kevin Owens and you know, some other things that are going on that are feeling fresh and new. So we'll see, but we had the Kevin Owens show really just be a platform for setting up the tag team match. And that's really all that was there for between Kevin Owens and, you know, Austin Theory and Angel Garza. And who was it? Apollo Crews that came out and helped. And he's been kind of in the mix lately. So it was fine. We didn't get a real true direction for Kevin Owens. It was just kind of, hey, I'm back. I'm going to get in this program that doesn't have a whole lot of longevity. It was just kind of a, I don't want to say boring return, but it didn't have a clear direction as a singles competitor for Kevin Owens. You could argue maybe it's with Angel Garza, but I don't know, because you already have Apollo Crews going after Andrade for the United States Championship. You also have Austin Theory. Does he exact revenge? Does he not care because he has a new leader? I mean, it'll be interesting to see if Austin Theory even retaliates against this group, because the storyline that preceded it was a bigger story and wouldn't really tie into what he's doing now, because you can't have a heel group versus a heel group with Seth's group versus with Zelina Vega's group. It just wouldn't make sense. So I don't know where they're going to go with that. Honestly, if I was to be a betting man, I would say that he just forgot all about it. I mean, they're going to pretend that it didn't even happen. And it's just a means to an end to get him to Seth. It's not about the beatdown. He's not going after revenge. You guys are, you know, I don't really care what you did because I'm a Seth now. I mean, they'll probably not even go down that road. Understandably, again, because it's heel versus heel, and that's very rarely attractive. So, but again, Kevin Owens is back. Yay. And we'll have to see what clear direction WWE puts him in next week. I mean, maybe he gets into something before Backlash, or maybe he doesn't. I mean, time's kind of ticking. You only got a few more weeks of TV before that happens. So let's see what else happened here as I'm going through. Humberto Carrillo versus Murphy. Murphy had a very physical night, working double duty with Murphy and Aleister Black, which, I mean, does it ever go wrong with those two? I mean, these two work so well together. And it's just, it's always magic when these two come together. And Murphy worked with Humberto Carrillo, who is a very good hand as well. I mean, really, you know, it shows a lot of trust that WWE has in Murphy to have him in multiple matches, and not just multiple matches, but segments. He doesn't say anything, but he was on camera 4 or 5 times last night. And it shows you that they believe that Murphy can make anyone look good, that they can just plug and play with Murphy. And that's exactly what he's did, what has happened, what they have done, what he's done. And that's fine. But if Murphy's going to make it to that next level, man, give him a damn personality. Please. Same with Austin Theory. But Murphy won that match after he was distracted, after Humberto Carrillo was distracted by Seth Rollins. So Murphy got the win. King Corbin versus, and I'll get to, actually, no, I'm sorry. Because I was going to talk about Natalya and Natalya and Shayna Baszler. So let's get to that. Natalya seems to be, after losing again to Shayna Baszler, and what was a physical match, a nice story told, and I like the trash talking that the women do during the match that seems authentic, and they're doing it as if there are no mics around, and they're just yelling at each other. This seemed to be, after the loss to Shayna Baszler, that this is a character shift for Natalya. And I'm all for it, because Natalya certainly needs some kind of change in her persona. Whether that's going heel, or whether that's a more edgy babyface, or whether we don't know yet, the fact is that Natalya has felt very stale for a long time. You know, she's just going to kind of get the mild, nice, lukewarm, legend, heart family type of respect reaction. But she's never going to be a blow you away, bombs away, you know, the crowd's going to explode type of reaction. She just hasn't ever gotten that. And so here, this shows you a shift in her personality, because she destroyed the Kevin Owens show set, and then she just left kind of disheveled. And to me, that's a sign, as I think the announcers alluded to it, that this was not, you know, this was disrespectful and not, it doesn't sit well with her lineage or her family lineage and the, you know, all this stuff. So they're clearly positioning her for a character change. So it's probably heel. A heel Natalya we've seen before, but some kind of version of Natalya that doesn't involve her wearing, you know, cat ears. Okay. I mean, please. All right. So, moving on to, as I said, King Corbin and Drew McIntyre, which was, the main event of Raw. This inter-brand, open-brand invitational is nothing more than the wild card rule disguised. That's all it is. It's the wild card rule disguised. And that shows you that WWE is running out of star power on brands when they have to bring over other guys from different shows and mask it with an open invitation or a whatever kind of, hey, we need people from another brand because we don't have anyone for this guy to fight. I mean, he's gone through everybody. Well, maybe if you stop letting him claymore the entire group that was newly formed, he would have more opponents. I mean, Drew McIntyre leveled the entire group with Angel Garza and Andrade and Austin Theory for weeks. And what do you expect? So they could have got a lot more out of that, a lot more juice from that squeeze, and they just decided not to and just go forth with Drew being the bulldozer. So they bring over Corbin, and we all know Corbin isn't going to win because, let's face it, Corbin never wins the big match. And so he gets Claymore kicked, although it was a good match. And Corbin, I think, is a good performer. I like his character. He was complaining to the referee that he didn't get food and no one groveled and he had fingerprints on his crown, all this little petty stuff that you'd expect from a king, right? And you know at the end of the night, he's just going to get Claymore kicked and lose. I mean, you could see it from a mile away, and that's what happened. And, you know, I don't feel as contrived or conflicted as I did about Drew Claymore kicking, you know, the three guys week after week, because it's King Corbin and I don't have that much emotionally invested in him. But boy, if they ever want this guy to get over, he's got to pick up some W's. I mean, please put some W's in this guy's win column. He needs it very, very badly. And maybe he also needs a little stable to run. He needs some guys to take hits for him, because he doesn't have that right now. He has a scepter. He has a crown. He cuts okay promos. He's good in the ring. But he's missing something. And I think that's a winning streak. And that's guys by his side to take lumps for him. So that, I mean, I think that's what's really missing from him. And he just needs to stop losing. Corbin needs to stop losing because there's no heat to blow off anymore. This guy's ice cold as a heel. He would, if he was in an arena right now, he would get little to no reaction. I mean, he'd get the occasional boos, but you don't take him too seriously because you know he's going to lose. Get the fans angry once in a while. Because that's what makes you that much happier when you see the heel get their ass kicked. It's not all about the immediate put a smile on your face. Let's worry about the long term here. And I think Corbin is really suffering in terms of credibility and feeling like he could be a true threat to someone's championship. So, just some food for thought there. Alrighty, what else did we have here? We had Charlotte Flair beat Ruby Riott. I mean, that's a shame, to be honest. It's kind of a shame because Ruby Riott, we all thought, was kind of on a roll since her re-debut. But Charlotte Flair is the clear focus right now, and she can't lose to Ruby Riott because she is NXT Women's Champion. She's on a roll. She had some little skirmish with Bayley. She can't afford to lose right now. But Ruby Riott, damn. I mean, I really thought she was on the ascent, and she runs into the brick wall that is Charlotte. So, good Lord, we got the Viking Raiders basketball tournament recap. I don't even want to get into that because it's just stupid. But then, don't worry, they're now performing other recreational sports of axe throwing. Yeah. I'm trying to keep this show mostly positive for once. It's just really hard with this stupid crap. It's ridiculous. And I'm not even going to recap it. Let's move on. They always got to have some terrible entertainment section of doing things that, you know, they get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to do every year, and they're worried about axe throwing and playing basketball and fooling the other team that they're bad at basketball when they're really good. I mean, please, God almighty. Okay, let's get to something better. Asuka in the ring. Kairi Sane was out there, and there were balloons everywhere. We mostly got broken English, which I'll take over screaming Japanese. And Kairi gives Asuka flowers and says that Asuka is Miss Money in the Bank. She's my partner, my friend, and the new WWE Women's Champion. So Asuka comes out dancing, smiling in her usual cartoonish type of gestures and voices and everything else that she does that's awkwardly charming. And we get an interruption. And it ended up, well, actually, Asuka is now Grand Slam champion. Yay, so is Bayley, although we're not talking about that. So we get Nia Jax interrupting here. And I mean, Nia Jax comes in and says that Asuka has handed the greatest temp job of all time. And that, look at me, look at you. I'm 240 pounds, you're 150 pounds, whatever the weight is, and it's probably around there. I mean, if I was to guess, and God almighty, WWE would never do this, but the fact is, I mean, in terms of the women's division, you have Nia Jax, who's basically a super heavyweight in proportion to the rest of the women's division. And I don't know Nia Jax's weight, right? I mean, I'm not body shaming anybody. For all those sensitive people out there, for God's sakes. But this is pro wrestling. And if I was to look at this and go, hey, how is this fair? I mean, there's David and Goliath stories all the time. Nia Jax is Goliath in almost any scenario except against Tamina, which no one cares to see. And Nia Jax is probably pushing a good 240, right? I mean, maybe 250. Nia Jax is a big girl, and a lot of what's on her is not necessarily like flat fat. I think she's a very strong woman. She's got a lot of muscle on her. A lot of muscle. And I'm sure she's setting records, and I believe she has in the performance center of lifting weights and all that, and that's great. So I'd say she's pushing 240, 250. Seriously. And you have Asuka, who's probably a buck 50. There's a good 180 to 100 pound difference in her and most of the roster. So they tell the David and Goliath story, and Nia Jax is a better heel anyway. I despise the Nia Jax babyface. I legitimately dislike Nia Jax's heel persona, which makes me happy when someone knocks her on her ass. And that's what happened here with Kairi Sane and Asuka, who's now officially a babyface along with Kairi Sane. So clearly she's the next and first opponent for Asuka to defend her women's championship against. And that's great. I mean, you got to set up for the program for Backlash. So they will tell that story there. And I believe Asuka will carry that championship for quite some time. I really believe that. Okay. We got R-Truth versus Bobby Lashley again. Bobby Lashley wins. I mean, I really have nothing much to say about that. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross versus the Iconics. And, I don't really... good grief. I mean, I don't have a whole lot to say on this match. I mean, I believe it was for the Raw Women's Tag Team belts. I think it was. Of which, you know, they mean about as much as the pen that I have in my hand right now, which is damn unfortunate. Although, Alexa and Nikki Cross are certainly a good team to have to carry those belts for a while. Even the Iconics were. I love the Iconics. I'm sad that they didn't get a ton of mic time this week. I love them on the mic. They're so obnoxious, and that's a compliment. But we got the Raw Tag Team, or the Women's Tag Team belts here, and Nikki Cross and Alexa end up retaining because of the disqualification on Peyton Royce, who was the non-legal participant in the match and just kept slamming Alexa Bliss into the ring post. So they get disqualified and setting up for a Backlash match between these two. I mean, that's the goal. You go from pay-per-view to pay-per-view setting up programs. It's formulaic, but this makes sense. So, again, I hope the Iconics at some point get the belts back. And maybe they could at the Backlash. They really could at Backlash. And I think they were shortchanged a little bit with their first run. So we also got a Undertaker Last Ride, bit of a preview for chapter 2, and said chapter 3 is coming Sunday. Guys, if you haven't seen the damn Last Ride documentary, part 1 and part 2, chapter 1, chapter 2, go see it. I did a review on chapters 1 and 2 on my show last night. So if you're interested, go check that out. All right. Moving on here, and let's see here. I think I might have covered the most of what happened on Raw. Kind of scrolling through and looking at anything that I may have missed. And my God, the Axe Tournament was just a multiple segment thing, and I'm just not even going to go there because it's just awful. It's just god awful. That was really the only downside of Raw to me was the things that weren't even about wrestling. Imagine that. I mean, you go to watch a movie and they give you, I don't know, a cartoon, right? You go to watch, like, I don't know, The Matrix, and they give you Sesame Street. Well, that's because I'm here for The Matrix, right? I mean, jeez, WWE. Good God. They always have to do this stuff. They just can't have a pure wrestling show, can they? They just can't do it because they try to serve so many masters. Because they think that there's some audience out there that goes, oh, this is great stuff. Somebody talk to me. Somebody please talk to me. Those of you that think that kind of stuff is funny or entertaining in any kind of way, other than discrediting the actual sport of professional wrestling, of which, yes, Edge called it a sport. Yay to Edge. So pat on the back and kudos to Edge for calling it a sport. And just really discrediting the whole show and the whole plausibility of that is just asinine. So, but anyway, I'm not going to get into too much of a rant about that. Overall, a very good show. I'd give it a B+, A- overall, from progressing storylines to reintroduction of talent to the believability and the pacing of the show. I mean, it was a very good show. It was very, very watchable, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as well, just as I hope that you enjoyed this podcast as well, because that concludes my Raw review. But don't worry, tomorrow I'll be back with your wrestling nostalgia for something fresh and new. I will look that up and have some suggestions in mind. And hopefully I get my damn Twitter back up and running. Again, I was suspended and no idea why. Some of you are cheering, I know. But thank you guys for listening. Again, if you want an ad-free experience, head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast, or you can just subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or Google or Spotify or iHeartRadio or radio.com. We're all over the place. So please give us a subscription if you love this show or don't want to miss an episode, because we got like four shows coming this week. We got Wrestling Nostalgia, AEW review, NXT review, SmackDown review from our new co-host that is going to be doing his first show this coming Saturday on SmackDown, as well as the weekend review. My God, we've got, what, like five? Did I count five shows on my hand here? So there's so much more coming to you guys this week as we roll through this pandemic and roll through it together and we slowly crawl out of it. It seems like we are. So thank you guys so much for listening. I'll talk to you soon. Hey, everybody. So it's not often that we talk about music here on this show or bands, but when we do, I think it's when it's worth listening to and when I run across a song or a band that I think it's worth sharing on this show. And that's one of these moments, and that's one of those bands that I think you guys should listen to. And it's just a particular song right now. And the song is called To the Fallen Sons. It's by a band called Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S. And they're a newly formed band from Sweden. And they love making music about history, which is really, really cool. So this song in particular is about Carolians and the soldiers of the Swedish kings, King Charles the VI and King Charles the VII in the late 17th and 18th centuries. So let me give you a quick sample. And again, you can find them on Spotify under the song To the Fallen Sons. It's by Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S.
Listening to the WWE podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to wwepodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/wwepodcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.